Tune into CGSF from November 25th to December 10th for special programming for the 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence. This year's theme is Orange the World, Generation Equality Stands Against Rape. In recent years, the voices of survivors and activists through campaigns such as hashtag MeToo and others have put the spotlight on issues of sexual violence and have reached a crescendo that cannot be silenced or ignored anymore. The Unite campaign is calling on people from all walks of life to learn more and take a stand against the pervasive rape culture that surrounds us. Listen to Speak Up, Intervenus, and SFU Issues and Ideas on CGSF to learn how.
Music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intervenus, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemon.
Good morning and welcome to Intravenous on CJSF 90.1 FM, campus community radio from the top of Burnaby Mountain, where we broadcast on the unceded Coast Salish territories of the Coquitlam, the Squamish, the Musqueam, and the Tsleil-Waututh people. It's still morning. And my name is Robin. I am your host for today's show. I'm pretty excited about my guests today. I have Miranda McDougall and Elizabeth Willoughby, who are two of the thieves of Little Thief Theatre, joining me to talk about their upcoming performance in response to Alabama. And we will dive into that and have, I'm sure, a very lively and interesting conversation about the show, but also about the theme and the topic of the show, which is abortion. Before we get into it, I'm going to play a song, and then I will be back with my guests. So don't go away. This is a track from Michelle Slinger called Flux here on Intravenous.
In the early days, it was crystalline. All that I did, all that I said aligned with what I'd mean. But I swear 3 weeks ago I was lovesick with this devotion, talking to my friends with R forever on my mind. If I can't shake it off, then we're just going through the motions. We're both lost in time. I'm always in. It all looks so crisp, like it's edited. But then my body starts to lift up to my head. Maybe it's an age thing, or that old life stage thing. I live my life in puzzles that I'm always rearranging. I'm convinced my sunshine spins are killing me. Stuck in what I'm supposed to be. I swear 3 weeks ago I was lovesick with this devotion, talking to my friends with R forever on my mind. If I can't shake it off, then we're just going through the motions. Will we get lost in time? I'm always in. Oh, I probably shouldn't be, but oh well. and hug you, then I bug you, and it's just because I turn the lights out. I can't stop thinking you're lying next to me, but in my mind I just keep drifting.
That was a track again from Michelle Slinger called Flux, and was a music selection chosen by my guests in the studio today. I have... Where's my paper? I have Miranda McDougall and Libby Willoughby from Little Thieves Theater here in the studio with me. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robin. Great to be here.
We are going to be talking about the play that you are opening tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And and what that's all about. And and all of the things that sort of surround it in terms of the theme. But let's begin with what Little Thief Theater does, why and how it started.
Excellent. Yes. So Little Thief Theater, I guess we could start with the genesis of it. Maybe we'll start work chronologically. So Libby and I... we were actually at a friend's, I don't know, a birthday or
it
something?
It was a B-day party.
It was a birthday party. And you mentioned that you wanted to create some work regarding, I guess, issues related to women. You wanted to make theater about, I think originally it was body dysmorphia,
right? Yeah, body image and body dysmorphia originally. But
right.
Then we've kind of... That's next.
Oh, yes, but we have grown. But I think we both expressed interest and excitement around making theater that related to all women and female-identifying folk and issues that were current and timely. And I think originally you expressed... you were looking for a director, and mm-hmm. I've done some directing work, and I said... I'll direct your show. Let's do it. Let's just make something. And we didn't have we didn't have anything. And I just kind of said, like, I like you. You like me. Let's just do something together, which is so often the case with artistic ventures. I think you just have to dive in with nothing and then find the something.
Yeah, you make the something.
You make the something. Yeah. So Little Thief Theater, I guess the name came from, there's a painting actually, one of my favorite paintings. It's called The Little Thief.
Hmm.
And it, I toured one show under the umbrella of Little Thief, but didn't really know what to do with it. I felt kind of lost about what it was, what the mandate was, what I wanted to explore. And then it just seemed really natural when Libby and I kind of came together and decided we wanted to jump into this whole business of making.
Yeah.
And then do you want to speak to any more of what we do, our mandate?
I think currently our mandate is really wrapped up in creating shows that reflect the female experience. And of course, that is such a broad range mm-hmm. of experience, which between the two of us, we have like a tiny slice of the pie.
Oh, totally.
Which is why we started, this is kind of our first big project for Little Thief, apart from Glassjaw, which Miranda toured. And it came from us starting with what we know, with our own lived experience, because that's really all that we can speak to, just the two of us.
Right. I think it's scary to say as a company we are taking on all of women's issues, because like Libby said, we represent such a small percentage of women and the experiences of women. So I think as we grow, it's exciting to look toward involving just, you know, people who identify as women in all semblances of the word and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's been nice doing this project this time. The first time we did it was back in June as part of a one-day festival called Hive, which is happening again in June 2020.
Hive 2020. Just
plugging that.
Plugging Hive 2020, presentation house theater.
And it was literally just the two of us in an actual janitor's closet. But this time we've been able to bring in some other artists to collaborate with. And we particularly focused on bringing as many women of color into the project as we could. So we've got Miriam Barry and Grace Lee who are working with us. And then our wonderful director, Kelty Forsyth, and our dramaturg, Veronique. So it's been great to collaborate with more different voices.
Yeah, women of different ages, women of different, obviously, persons of color and people of different sexual orientations, and just kind of expanding from our pretty narrow cis identity as women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because our voices are multiplicitous.
They are multiplicitous.
Really?
They are indeed.
Yeah. I fully support theater and all art creations.
Yay.
By more women's voices. Mm-hmm. You know, that might be evident by the show that I do, where you know,
no.
I try to feature more and more women's voices and play more and more women's music,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Just, you know, elevate the experiences that we have, because we do have different experiences in the world,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, completely.
And so this play that you've got opening tomorrow, it's called In Response to Alabama,
mm-hmm,
it's a play about abortion.
Mm-hmm.
What are you responding to with this play?
That's a long answer, Robin.
Yes.
There's a lot that we are responding to. We were actually, when this play was born, we were writing a different piece. Well, mm-hmm. I say we. Miranda was writing a different piece that was very much wrapped up in reproductive rights. And then the news of the abortion restrictions that they were trying to pass in Alabama broke last spring. And we both kind of went, oh. We got to do something, because not everybody has the same kind of visceral reaction to it that we did, being women who have had abortions. And the ripple effects that we see from this kind of alt-right anti-choice movement that's becoming very loud and prevalent in the States, and the ripple effects that we're seeing up here in Canada. And Canada's never been particularly perfect when it comes to access and equity for abortion. So this is a very convoluted way of saying there was something happening south of the border that we felt could really affect women here and now, and we wanted to do something about it.
I think it was important too. The piece that I was writing was a piece of fiction. Of course, I was drawing on my own experience having had an abortion, and the experiences of others with whom I spoke about abortion. But I think we both felt that this was a really great opportunity to almost create a piece of, quote, theater or performance art, I think it kind of began as, that would act as almost a protest to our own piece, you know? I think we both felt that we weren't ready to tell a piece of fiction about abortion if we were not even able to own our own stories. And I think the silence that surrounds having an abortion, and the shame and the guilt that's all wrapped up in that, and how little we talk about it. And when you don't talk about something, it becomes taboo and it becomes scary, and it's much easier to put these restrictions on something that is just not mainstream conversation. So I think with this, we thought, I mean, it's so easy to get overwhelmed with thinking, what can I do? How can I help? How can I change? And we thought, well, what we can do is change the conversation, and we can start with our own stories, and we can tell them over and over and over again until it becomes commonplace.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And comfortable.
Exactly. Yes. And comfortable. And I don't know if we're there yet. I don't know if I'll ever be fully there, but I think that's what is exciting, is about challenging my comfort with this story. Sometimes I tell it and I feel really comfortable. Other times I feel afraid. I feel you know, guilt and shame and all of the things that are kind of wrapped up in that, even though I can confidently own my decision, and I'm pretty opinionated and solid in my views, but that's not to say that there isn't so much more wrapped up in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you loud mm-hmm. and clearly. Mm-hmm. and maybe other women in the listening audience are also resonating because it's a complicated decision, mm-hmm. first and foremost, yeah. right? And it is something that I think ebbs and fluxes in terms of how, as we progress through our lives, we feel, mm-hmm. you know, like the layers of the onion, you know, yes. sort of come off and, right. you know, sometimes, and depending on who we're with and you know, how we feel in that moment can really change how steady we feel.
Completely.
You know?
Yes. Yeah. I think that also my abortion was 5 years ago now, 5 or 6, I think. And I think as I draw closer to perhaps an age when I would maybe want to explore the idea of having children, I'm 27 now, and I think that I don't see that anytime soon, but I worry that as I grow closer to that time, what is yet to kind of come up and what I've yet to maybe grieve surrounding just childbirth and pregnancy, or maybe I'll be fine. I don't know, but it does feel like this really vast unknown, and I'm curious and maybe a little afraid as to how it will affect me. I think mm-hmm. when I had my abortion, and I still am, I was in a very I kind of was discovering my own place in feminism, and I was getting a degree in women and gender studies, and of course I think that influenced my decision a lot, and I was really proud to stand with women who fought for abortion and also had abortions. But not to say that I've you know, wandered from that place at all. I'm still a nice, proud, stomping little feminist. But I'm curious to see how my feelings surrounding the whole thing will ebb and flow, as you said, with age, with circumstance.
And I think a thing that I've struggled to get across to people who don't have a personal experience of this is that even though those questions and those feelings come up, it doesn't make your decision a wrong decision. It doesn't make your choice invalid for you to come up against something that's difficult to, you know, to have grief, to, you know, have a moment maybe later in life where you're like, I feel differently about this now. It doesn't invalidate the decision, because I think sometimes what particularly anti-choice movements do is they use these stories of like regret as a stick to beat women with.
Right.
And I'm not a fan.
Right.
Right.
I'm not a fan of that.
Right. And it also, it just contributes to the conversation that your choice is black and white and it can only be one thing, and it mm-hmm. completely negates the complexity that lives within the abortion conversation. We're not saying that it's black and white. I don't see it as black and white. And it's a completely individualized experience and process that one needs to go through ultimately alone, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. definitely. And I think if you don't sort of go through that process alone, then it does leave you more wide open to regret mm-hmm. and not really feeling like maybe you made that decision for yourself.
Right. Right. And of course, there's and a community surrounding the decision, and that's wonderful mm-hmm. if you have access to that. But one, not everyone has access to that. And that two, at the end of the day, you are the person who is going through with the abortion. It is it's an individual act.
A thing that I found really difficult about my experience was that everybody wanted to give me their opinions about it when I hadn't, so I didn't have as much room to process my own feelings because everyone was saying, you're doing the right thing, you're doing the wrong thing, mm-hmm. I agree with you, I disagree with you, and it's I don't care.
Right.
I don't care how you feel.
You were younger too, right?
I was 18.
Right.
So it was also, it was very difficult for me as a, you know, literal child to then forge my way through all of that and be trying to figure out, mm-hmm. you know, I've never regretted my decision. I knew I was doing the right thing. I didn't have doubts. But what really affected it really affected my processing of everything, having so many people's mm-hmm. unwanted opinions in the mix.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is kind of comforting to know that people don't want you to make mistakes in your life.
Yes, you know? Of course. And yes. Everyone meant well. And I knew that at the time, but, and I know that now. Yeah.
But it is hard to be able to sort of separate what's yours and theirs.
Yes,
in
especially
the,
when you're
the mix of it all.
18 and dealing with pregnancy hormones.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Woo-hoo. Yeah. Fun stuff.
Oh, my goodness. So the bigger conversation mm-hmm. is really about the relationship between women's autonomy over our bodies and reproductive rights in general.
Yeah.
How do you understand those things? Mm.
Good question.
How do we understand
reproductive rights or autonomy?
Regarding
or both?
All of it.
All of it, all of both, either.
Well, I do think that, I mean, do we talk about men's reproductive rights, right? Like, have you ever, I think women's reproductive rights has become such a catchphrase.
Yeah.
And yet, I don't hear conversations on men's reproductive rights. And the fact that ours are so heavily governed, when you really just take a step back, it's so strange. It's just
it's very,
very strange.
Surreal.
And we've come to accept it as commonplace, but I think this project has allowed us, and me at least, to just take a step back and really see this harsh governing for what it is, mm-hmm. which is just, it's nothing but silly. Like, it's really stupid. I don't even want to give it a nice
yeah.
term. It just
it's
feels
so
unworthy of, you know, there's just taking up space in conversation, something that just feels that should be a right. And I think about the women and people that have fought for reproductive rights in the past years and years and years and years. And yeah, it breaks my heart a bit that we're still having to fight for this and continuously taking steps backward with regard to who has what say over mm-hmm. this body of mine.
A thing that has struck me a lot as I've been developing my piece and as we've been having these conversations is my boyfriend, who I was with at the time when I got pregnant, one of the first things he said to me when we found out is like, you can have the baby, but I'm not involved. So he just washed his hands of it. There was no, he could just easy walk away, no questions asked. No one would have even batted an eye, really. Maybe called him an asshole, but that would have maybe been the upper limit on that. And, you know, my biological father did the same thing when my mom was pregnant with me. He was like, okay, great, have yourself a baby, see you later.
Yeah.
And the fact that in society is not really seen as that weird. And yet for me to say, I don't want this, makes me... What?
You're legislated
exactly.
now.
Right. I'm an unnatural woman. I'm yeah. a monster. I'm a this. Mm-hmm. I'm a that. Well, no. Mm-hmm. I was a child who was completely unprepared for motherhood, the same as him. And yet I had to go through this process of conflict and emotion and grief and control over my body, and he didn't have to. He had no, maybe there was some like emotional ramifications for him, I don't know, but yeah, it's crap.
Yeah. This is where we're not allowed to swear on the radio, but I feel like there's a lot of words that could really fly about that.
Oh yes.
Because it is and really sets up what that dichotomy is between the experience of what women live and what men live,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And really the silliness of how there is no talk about men's reproductive
rights.
Yeah. And, you know, men aren't forced or not forced to have vasectomies, which,
right.
you know, are, as mm-hmm. far as I understand, very easy in the doctor's
yes.
office
yes.
Procedures
right.
that, you know, in a few instances are
unsnipped,
problematic,
like,
but
can you go back?
It's
you can
also
go back.
Reversible.
Yeah, right. Fully reversible.
Wow.
And so, you know, the fact that that women's bodies are so heavily legislated in so many ways. And it you know, it's interesting because I am postmenopausal, and so it's a different...
Yeah, you face a different set of legislation.
It's a different thing, right? Yeah. But all of a sudden, now that I am post-fertile, then the society has no use for me, right? Like, it's really about that sort of capitalist productivity and our usefulness in the machine.
Yes, completely.
That's why The Handmaid's Tale is so utterly terrifying.
Right?
It doesn't, and people, I've gotten this question from male friends before of like, why can't you watch that show? Like, it's a good show. And I'm like, because I watch it and I'm like, we are not that far away. Like, it's not a massive leap.
Right.
It's really not.
Right. Yeah, and speaking to, I think just the threat apparently that we pose in this fertile age and reproductive age. It's the only thing I can really think of is maybe feeling threatened by women of a reproductive age. I just don't know. It's so strange to me. And of course I am well read on the issue, so I could, you know, talk about the reasons that we discuss in society, I find often, about autonomy and reproductive rights. But at the same time, I almost feel like it doesn't even, it's so ridiculous that we even have to have this conversation, that it just feels, I can't even grapple with it anymore.
Yeah.
I'm jaded. I'm 27 and I'm jaded. I'm over it.
Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying.
And the way that it gets presented in the media as well, particularly anti-choice sorts of movements. I was reading an article that just came out about the bill that they're trying to pass in Ohio, which would make it a crime not to reimplant an ectopic pregnancy in the uterus,
which
is
kill women.
Scientifically impossible to do.
Right.
But this would send doctors to prison for life. There's also another crime that they're trying to invent called aggravated abortion murder, for which you could get the death penalty.
Right.
It's insane. And the image that they put with these stories, first of all, centers older white men. Okay. And then they always stage it so that there are young mothers holding their babies around this white guy who's like signing this bill, you know? And it's so manipulative.
Mm.
I love the tweets that are kind of coming back from OBGYN's gynecologist saying, hi there, hello, for the 17th time, this is impossible. This is medically impossible. This does not exist.
Yeah.
Have a great day.
Mm-hmm.
I love that response. I love it. Just put it back to science. And
I want to say there's no way this bill's going to get passed. But we don't know that. And the emotional labor that women and like female identifying folk go through every time some person tries to get something like this signed into law is just, why?
It's exhausting.
Why we got, it is exhausting. Every time I read the news, I'm like, oh God, here we go.
Right.
You know? Another attack on my uterus.
Yeah. It ties me up in knots, really, when I see that, see those things happening out there in the law world, and especially when things are impossible.
Yeah.
Right? And that men who have no place making any decisions about our bodies and our functionalities and our processes and our everythings are the ones who are there deciding and signing these things into existence.
Yeah.
Where we can die.
I know.
We can die.
And women do.
And women do.
All over the world.
But I think that's why, I do think politics has a big place in this, and that's why it's so important to support women, female lawmakers, and get women into public policy and having women write legislature, because that, I think, only then is when we will start to see a shift where you kind of start to invade mm-hmm. this little group of men who have been making, you know, writing legislature and passing these things, or at least attempting to. Yeah. But I think infiltrating that very small bubble with women is really exciting, and that gets me mm-hmm. excited to, you know, even on just a local small level, to support women who are excited about changing policy.
Yeah.
It's important.
And there's a scary thing happening in Canada right now, which I haven't heard all that much talk about, which is that there's a lot of anti-choice groups who are actively encouraging their members to apply for positions in MPs' offices mm-hmm. so that they can influence MPs and policymaking.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Right. It was in the news maybe a couple months ago, but this is a thing that they're literally trying to infiltrate government, and everyone's just going, "Oh, well, I guess there's nothing we can do about that." Mm-hmm. So no. If you are pro-choice, get yourself into an MP's office, apparently.
Right. Yeah. A desperate new career choice.
Yes.
Right.
I've thought about it. I know.
Oh, dear. You're listening to Intravenous on CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio from the top of Burnaby Mountain. My name's Robin, and my guests today in the studio are Miranda McDougall and Libby Willoughby, who are from Little Thief Theatre, and they have a production opening tomorrow called In Response to Alabama, which is part and parcel of what we're talking about today. I think it's a good time to take a song break.
Ooh.
And then come back and just pick up a little bit more on our conversation here about what it means to have body autonomy and what you've learned in the process of creating this play in response to Alabama. So do we have a song?
We do. Should I just tell you what I would want you to play?
Yeah.
Potentially.
Let me.
I love this. This is. They get to hear.
Hold
us.
On, folks. We're,
Libby, do you have a song?
To our
I chose Michaela's Flux song.
You did. Oh, I do have a song, and it's one that I thought of because I listened to it a lot right after my abortion. So, will you like it? I don't know, but you're gonna hear it.
And well, I play things that I like, and I'm not sure people will like.
Should I just plug it in here and play?
Sure.
Oh,
yeah.
I can't. It's this one. It's called The Mother We Share by Churches.
Exciting.
Yeah, so exciting. Getting a little sneak peek into the inner workings of my brain here, folks.
Oops. Oh, no. Oh, no. Wait. called The Mother We Share, which is a little more of an electronic version, I hear.
Yeah, very exciting. I've never heard that version before.
I like it.
I'm here with my guests, Miranda McDougall and Libby Willoughby from Little Thieves Theater, and we're talking about abortion, which is the theme of their play, which opens tomorrow. It is called In Response to Alabama. And just in the 20 minutes that we have left in the show, which I was, you know, saying to Miranda over the song break, this is something we could probably talk for
ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Forever. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to be generous and say a week, right. But
sure.
Forever.
Maybe a week. Yeah. Maybe a week. I'll never stop talking about it.
Yeah,
and yeah, that it's very meaty. But what I'm interested in is what some of the challenges and drawbacks were that you faced in putting this show together. Yes. Were there any?
I think with any show, yes, there's bound to be little obstacles that pop up. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're exciting. I think both of us, having, you know, worked in theater for so long and produced it and directed and acted, mm-hmm. and kind of worked in all facets of theater, we get excited about the little bumps and roadblocks that come about, because it's just a problem that you get to solve, and often it forces even more creativity. It forces you to think deeper about what it is you want to say, mm-hmm. and what's the best way to tell that story.
Yeah.
We've been really, really lucky to our producers at Pi Theater have been incredible to work with, and so generous, and just basically yes men and women, kind of, you know, saying yes to anything that
all of our requests.
So that's been anything but an obstacle, and we're really grateful to just have their support in presenting this piece. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Liv? Anything that stands out as a...
I think the main obstacle has been figuring out how to tell our stories, because you would think, oh, that's easy, it's your story, you know it, mm-hmm. you can't get it wrong, but on the inside it doesn't always feel like that. And is this the right way to tell it? Am I being fair to the people that I'm speaking about in my story?
Right.
You know, all those things. And then confronting the fact that it's almost easier to tell the story to a room full of strangers than it is to, you know, the people you're closest to sometimes.
Right.
And that's a thing that I think we've run up against a little bit, or at least I have for sure. And then... In a place like Vancouver, I don't have too much worry that we're going to encounter like protesters or anything.
Right.
Like, I'm not that concerned about it. But it is something that occurred to me the other day. Is like, oh God, what are we going to do if someone shows up who does not want
It'll
us
be
to
a
be doing
part
this?
Of the piece.
Exactly.
Maybe they'll think we planted them.
Maybe. Yeah, it's a plant. But I think those. Yeah, but again, that's not something I'm super worried about. We live in a pretty liberal little bubble of a city.
Mm-hmm. I think speaking to that to that end about storytelling and being an actor and a theater creator, I think I had a tendency to want to present this in a way that felt polished or done or creative, or, you know, I wanted to break expectation, but just to really strip that away and remember that I am just telling my story. And I think the more raw and verbatim, if you will, this play, and I put little air quotes around play,
you can't see them, but they're there.
Yeah. I just think the more honest and raw it is, the more effective the piece as a whole is. I want this, we want this to feel like a conversation. And something that Robin and I, we were just talking about over the break, is you need to welcome people into this conversation, and you can't throw information at them. I don't want to make anyone feel guilty. I don't want to make anyone feel bad about bearing witness to this story. And instead, just, I think welcoming is a really key word, which feels... it feels maybe like it juxtaposes the topic of abortion. But I think that's kind of what we're trying to do in a way.
Because I think people are inherently curious about this. And the first time we did this piece out in our little janitor's closet, we people were, they had questions. They were really thrilled almost to be hearing something that you normally don't really get to hear.
There was a really beautiful reverence I found with people.
Yeah.
People felt kind of honored to have held space with us and had that conversation, especially being that it was in such a physically small and restricting space. It was really intimate. We were probably like 2 feet away from people.
If that.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a janitor's closet. So, of course, I like to think of our space was definitely a character in those pieces, wouldn't you say?
It was. Yeah. It was. It was the fourth person in the room.
Really?
And it was the room.
And it was the room. So meta.
Yes.
But I
Can
think,
you tell we're theater makers?
I think people, yeah, I think there was, people were honored to just be there and to listen.
Yeah.
And there's an interesting part of this experience this weekend where we invite people to stick around after having seen all three pieces. And we want to emphasize that it is part of the show to stick around and have a conversation. We will most likely be out there. You can ask us questions, you know, just start conversations amongst the audience and I guess with performers as well.
Yeah, and we also are partnering with a really great organization called Peak Resilience Counseling.
Right.
So on our Friday show and our two Saturday shows, they are sending a counselor to be an active listener for our audience members. So if anyone's feeling particularly there's the freedom to just walk out mid-performance and go and talk to our active listener if someone finds it to be too much. Hopefully that doesn't happen. And I think actually what is really beautiful, we heard each other's pieces again on Monday night. They're funny. And I don't think people are going to be anticipating that. They're really funny.
Right.
Because there's moments of beautiful humor and levity in all of our stories. But we do have this person there who is there to talk with our audience members and emotionally support them if they need that, which is awesome. And the woman who's joining us on Friday actually also works at an abortion clinic, so she can also speak to that side of things, which is really nice.
And I think that would be really nice at the end of the evening on Friday, maybe if we opened up a conversation with her and just allowed for that perspective.
That is wonderful, and I think that's really part of the gift also that this show is, right, is that because it's such a siloed, you know, like you go through this experience and maybe you tell your close friends that it's happening, that it did happen, that you have these feels about it, but then it's kind of closed, right? And it's something that you just carry. And there's not a lot of witnessing that happens in terms of what your story is and what your experience is. And so I think, for people's reverence, you know, because you're kind of taking your heart in your hand and presenting this very heavy experience in a lot of ways to listeners and to watchers.
Yeah.
And then to be able to have someone from the counseling service there as well. Just in case there are things that get a little too feely for people, you know?
There could be that. And you're right that it is a heavy topic, but we definitely don't want it to feel that way.
No.
And I don't think our pieces there are moments of weightiness for sure, but I think overall there's something kind of joyful about them as well. And the joy that we take in the freedom to share this. Because not everybody has that freedom.
Well, and not we live in a place where we can share it pretty fear-free. Like I think we are for the most part
pretty unafraid.
Yeah, I think we're confident in telling these stories in this place and living on this land that has, you know, that is an accepting, fairly liberal place. I think it would be a very different story if we were presenting this show
in Alabama
or in Alberta, honestly.
Even,
for sure.
And I think that's important to regard, is that there are places in our own country where we wouldn't feel as safe having this conversation.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
So much.
I know. What kinds of responses do you hope to get from your audience?
Yeah.
Is there sort of an expectation that people will come and leave with something?
I think the ideal response for me would be thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I remember hearing that from folks who saw the piece when we did it in June with Hive. And there were a few thank yous that just felt really, really big and deeper than just thank you. And we didn't really go any further. I didn't know how it affected them or if it did. Perhaps they had a similar situation. Perhaps they had had an abortion. But there was kind of like this mutual knowingness of, wow, thank you for doing that. I think because we're so in it right now, it's hard to remember that this is really brave work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as an artist, it's difficult to be proud of yourself.
Yeah, it's hard to pat yourself on the back for that.
For anything, like, really. I feel
I
don't know, but I'm not good at doing that.
No, never.
It's just difficult to be proud of yourself.
Yeah.
But this is a piece that I am trying to remind myself of just how brave it is and outwardly own the fact that I'm proud of us.
Yeah, I am too. And I would love for if there are women in the audience who have maybe been through something like this, who maybe haven't been able to talk about it or whatever that experience is for them, I would love for them to leave feeling less alone.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it can be a remarkably isolating experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a conversation that a lot of people don't know how to have. And maybe we set some kind of roadmap for one woman in the audience. I don't know.
And that's the beautiful thing about theater. And think about when you go to a show. I often go to a show and then I talk about it for a few days, if not weeks on end, if I'm really affected by it. Even if it's people who aren't necessarily in the theater scene, you know. If it's kind of conjured something that I find interesting or timely, I'm excited to share that with people, be it over dinner, over coffee, on a walk, you know.
Yeah.
We just share these pieces of lived experience in our lives, and the fact that this can become a lived experience for audience members, and it has the potential to be a part of a conversation that carries out beyond the Russian Hall and into the world and for months perhaps from now.
Yeah.
That's really exciting to me.
Yeah. Same.
I feel also excited about the conversation piece because it is isolating.
Yeah.
You know? And it's hard to know where to start that conversation. You know, do you just blurt it out?
Totally. It's nice to have. Maybe this could even be a reference point or an in for a conversation. Someone could say, "Oh, I saw this piece of theater," and then go from there.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if we could give that to someone who needs an in or who wants one but feels like it's just too scary and too big and too out of the blue to just dive into this, but maybe this could be a catalyst of sorts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And something this, you know, we are by no means preaching to our audience or beating them over the head with anything. But by the same token, I would love for people even to just reflect for a second and think, gee, I know a lot of women. So odds are some of them have had an abortion, because many of us have. And have they talked to you about it? Why or why not? You know, do you make yourself available for those conversations? Do you signal to the women in your life that they can talk to you?
Right.
So not to shame anybody or say that they've been being a bad friend, partner, family member, whatever, by no means. But I think it's, and about so many things, it's important for all of us to reflect and say, like, do I make myself available to the people in my life? Do they know they can come to me with stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah, because we don't have a badge.
No.
You know, there's no badge that we get.
Please address me.
And so, how do you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know? who those sort of safe people are.
Because
there are those safe people, but then, you know, we've all experienced saying things that are pretty close to our hearts, mm-hmm. and then it's not the safe person.
And it's not received in the
and
way
it's,
you hope.
It's not would. Welcomed.
And all it mm-hmm. takes is one of those, and then forever you're thinking, well, how do I tell other people? Because I thought this was a safe person, and it wasn't, so who else am I wrong about? You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things that I've been thinking a lot about lately, and I think that it's one of the beautiful things about the show that you're working on, and people will be able to see over the weekend, is about how we as women really struggle to trust ourselves, and you know, trust what we need, trust what we do, trust what we've done, trust, you know, just trust, because it's not something that I think is taught to us as girls and as young women, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to really own that and trust our bodies and trust what it is that we need and what it is that we have to say is such a critical piece of what that means. And so be brave and go forth and just knock them dead on the stage this weekend.
Thank you.
The show details the where, what, how, all of the things.
So it's at the Russian Hall, which is at 600 Campbell Avenue in Vancouver. There is a limited audience capacity. Mm-hmm. We can only take 30 people per show. We have 4 shows. So if you want to come, get your tickets online, pietheater.com.
Yes, 8 o'clock showtimes on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then we do have a Saturday matinee at 4 o'clock p.m. Running time of the show is about an hour. We will actually be having the musical stylings of Michaela Slinger, whose song you heard earlier, Flux. Mm-hmm. That will be on Thursday evening and Saturday evening as kind of an afterglow.
Mm-hmm. While you're chit-chatting about what you saw, she'll be just serenading us.
Or you can stop. You can stop and listen to her.
Oh, yeah, and you'll want to, believe
She's
me.
Just the best. Just the best. What else should we tell people?
That's
we
a
have,
great
Have we
question.
Covered the who? Yes. The what?
The
where?
The when?
When? And the why? Well, we
I mean,
know
if
the why.
You don't understand the why by now.
Then even more reason to come.
Yes, exactly. Then you really need to.
Then you must come.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So 4 shows, matinee.
Mm-hmm. On the Saturday,
On the Saturday. Tickets through Pi Theater, and that's spelled P-I.
P-I. Theater.com. And you're looking for In Response to Alabama.
Yes, it should be right there on the banner.
Oh, it is right there.
It's pretty easy to find. It's a great website. Whoever did that website.
Yeah, very easy to navigate.
Yeah, I like it.
Love it.
I feel like I had one more thing to say, but...
And yet?
Maybe not. Alas, I'm at a loss for words.
Well, I am going to give you just a last quick word here.
Yeah.
Because I want to know what you are most excited about the play.
Ooh. Libby?
Make me go first. I think what I'm most excited about is honestly just the amazing group of women that we've assembled to work on this piece, how much of a joy it's been to work with each of them, and how much the fruits of all the labor that we've put in and the time is really going to show. And I'm super proud of the team we've assembled. It feels like a huge success to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that I love working with other artists who I get excited about. So here we are.
Yes, I echo that 1,000%.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely share that sentiment. We've worked with some incredible women. And this show would not be in the place that it is right now without them.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, what I am excited about is, I'm excited about how things will change. I think it's not often that you have such liberty when doing a show and you know, you have lines usually and you have to stick to them for a just a multitude of reasons, but I am excited for what will come of the conversation when we do have these 30 or so people in the room, and perhaps what people will laugh at, what people will find compelling, and how that will kind of change this, the way that we tell our story. Of course, we have our structure and we have our, quote, script, but I'm excited to let myself play and just be real and be me and not feel kind of chained to a way that the story should sound.
Yeah, so if you're coming to the show, please know you have permission to laugh. You can do it.
Absolutely. Yes, we welcome laughter. We welcome tears. We welcome
all of it.
You can cough.
Anything you want to feel.
Yes. Anything human, we allow.
I love the caveat about laughing, because sometimes I have a very strange sense of humor and I find odd things funny, but then it feels kind of awkward.
Oh my gosh.
To
I would
laugh.
Say just laugh, always laughing, you know, in the theater. Yes.
I am that person who's always the only one laughing at a joke, like 100%.
You also laugh at your own jokes.
I do laugh
really
at my
hard.
Own jokes.
Yes. Which I laugh with you, but you're sometimes like, well, she's really laughing at this joke.
I mean, if you don't find yourself funny, how are you going to find anybody else funny? Am I right?
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Fantastic. I want to thank you so much for coming and being my guests today, and I wish you the best of luck with the run of your show.
Thank you for having us.
My guests have been Miranda McDougall and Libby Willoughby from Little Thieves Theater Company, and their show In Response to Alabama is playing at the Russian Hall this weekend, starting tomorrow night. And you can get tickets through Pi Theater's website. That's spelled P-I Theater. And get out and see it. Experience culture in the town, and talk back with your performers and the actors in the show. My name's Robin. I have been your host for the show. Audio will be posted up on the website, so you can re-listen to this conversation at your leisure, and stay tuned for Democracy Now!, which is coming right up. Thanks.